And welcome back to the latest edition of the Sacramento Kings podcast presented by Hoop Ball and the Hoop Ball Podcast Network. I'm Damian Barling, D-Lo and KC on ESPN 1320, along with your host, Jill Adge. We've been absent for a while.
We back.
That's my bad. That is 100% on me. Jill has been on me to be getting this done, and there's reason after reason and excuse after excuse that won't happen again. We are here. We will take care of your off-season needs. We'll have draft talk, this talk, that talk. But Jilly, the one thing we won't have is coach talk, at least not coaching search talk.
Unless we somehow find out they're looking for an assistant.
Well, that could very well be possible.
You never know what's going to happen. We saw two leave last year, so you never know. I doubt it, but yeah. If one of them gets interviewed for a position, you never know.
So I know you're not big on Luke Walton returning. What's your biggest frustration here? As a matter of fact, this is your podcast. Why don't you just lay out all your frustrations with Luke Walton? Let's see if we could work through them.
At this point, though, I'm not happy about it, but it is what it is. And I'd rather be like, okay, he's here. Now let's fix the damn thing. I've made it pretty well known that he wasn't going to be my first choice, to stick around. I will say this. I've been, I love my research, and I've been, trying to look up as much as I can of, the time when he was with the Lakers, how those young guys felt about him as well, because I was saying this yesterday too, that fans' perceptions of people in this league are not the same as the fraternity, those guys are in a fraternity together. Coaches feel one way about each other. Players feel a certain way about coaches and about, fellow players. And then you have fans' perceptions of what they think all those, people are. But most of the time, it's what our perception of what we think is going on is not necessarily what's going on, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Perception
versus reality.
Yes. That's not an excuse or by any means of like, oh my God, I think, he's great. No, I'm just saying we care about wins and losses. We're not getting that. So our perception of anybody that's not getting that is going to be they're not doing their job. Right. But again, with this season, we're not there at practices. We're not there on, the bus. We're not there during the little practices they had during their film sessions, things like that. I just listened to a podcast yesterday from Rashawn Holmes was on the Road Trippin' podcast with Channing Frye and Richard Jefferson, two journeymen, right? And Frye played with Luke at Arizona. And my perception of him has always been, he's Bill Walton's kid. He's this laid back, woo. He's been around the league. Has always been on good teams, right? Never been put through the diversity or the adversity that, these young players are getting because he went right into a grand old Laker, dynasty situation where, his vets are Gary Payton, Karl Malone, Kobe Bryant. I mean, it's the people he had to bring him into this league is crazy where we don't have anything like that here. And my biggest question mark on him was always, can he handle bringing a young team to that? Being that, yes, he can relate to these players, but he was also never in the situation that these players are saying, this is the first time they've ever had to deal with losing, and what the hell do I do to get out of it? But segue back to the podcast, and Frye was saying that in Arizona, after they lost a game, he said Luke would not talk to anybody. Like, they knew if they lost a game and you're on that bus, he has his headphones on, he's watching game tape, he's icing his knees and his ankles, and he's focused on next one up, we're not doing this again, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it was a known thing. So they asked Rashawn Holmes, who earlier in the podcast was saying that he'd never been on a team with as many jokesters before, which to me, that's not surprising. This is, a younger team. Or as Tyrese Halliburton says, we're not necessarily younger. We're just young and experienced. Mm-hmm. because you have vet guys there, but the vet guys you have, minus Harrison Barnes, are not winning championships or in the playoffs. Games, but right. Besides DeLon Wright and Harkless, who came, and Davis, who all came from winning teams at some point in their career and are now in this situation. So he was saying Rashawn was saying he loves being on this team, and it's a great atmosphere and that kind of stuff. But they're also not always, I guess, serious when they need to be serious like that. And so they were asking, how does Luke handle that? Because they know his personality. And he said that he, will rip them on the bus rides if they've just won a game, and, he'll kind of crack some jokes with them, like, okay, guys. But he said if they're joking on one of their losing streaks or after they lose a game, which, we've always wondered, how does this team react after these things happen? Well, mm-hmm. Rashawn let us know. Mm-hmm. that they're, they're younger and they're just happy to be playing, right? Like, they're, it's whatever, we lost a game, they want to win, but they're still, we're happy to be in the league, right?
Yeah.
He said that he gets up and just starts cussing at them. You just had your asses handed to you. You were embarrassed. You're supposed to be professionals. How dare you go out there like that and then come back on this bus and crack jokes and thinks everything is all, hunky-dory, essentially. And the faces of Fry and Richard, they were like not shocked, but they were not shocked that he did that. But they were shocked when he said that the team was joking like that after losses. Which I thought was pretty telling, because you can watch the podcast on YouTube so you can see their faces. They weren't shocked they got yelled at. They were shocked that the team was joking after losing. And then Fry was saying that he came from a team where after a loss, they couldn't have their cell phones. They got fined if they got caught using their phone after a loss. And so Richard just went on to say a little bit more, that he thinks that Luke's going to surprise people if he's ever given a team of like-minded individuals as himself. He said he'll go out and win 50 games, no problem. You give him a team of Luke's, that's what's going to go happen. I don't know if that's true, but again, I'm just saying perception of what two guys in the league that were around him are saying, you give him a team like that, mm-hmm. he will turn you around. If you give him a team of jokesters and stuff like this, he's just going to keep yelling at you. But does that change anything? Obviously not, right? And that's boils down to our issue here is, it's, yes, I think it's a coaching problem. I also think it's a player problem. And right now, you decided to bring the coach back. You know what kind of players now you have to bring in here to make this work, because for two seasons we've seen, with the same kind of core-ish group of it's not nice. Working, right? Like you have three guys that are making over $20 million now, that De'Aaron Fox is in that bench now. He's going to be making 30, something. Yeah. And you have Buddy and Barnes making over 20 each. That's a lot of your salary cap on guys that are not moving the needle for you, right? We can't say Fox isn't moving the needle. We've seen it from him. But the other two,
in terms of wins and losses, they are
right. Yes. And that's kind of been our issue for over this 15 years, right? Like, we see individual development from players, but we never see it ever actually mesh as a team into a team talent based. In terms of wins and losses. And so now Monty's, he's hitched his ride to Luke, and essentially this is his guy now.
Yeah.
And as he mentioned on his interview this morning, don't trust me because I haven't earned your trust. But, you know, and also didn't ask for patience. That was nice. I appreciated that. Like, don't tell me to be patient. Mm-hmm. Like he said, no, don't trust me. I haven't earned your trust. It's on me. This is my job. I have to deliver for you. Otherwise, we're held accountable point blank. Like that's where we're at now. And I know you can say it's not necessarily fair to these guys because he's been here a year and Luke's been here 2 years, not the 15-year, you know, drought. But again, these are the situations you knew coming into this where we were at, and everyone wants that turnaround. Now it's up to Monty to swing to bring in the players that are going to bring you that turnaround.
One thing that I really liked about the press conferences yesterday, particularly Monty McNair's, is it felt like he set the expectations, and the expectations were clear. This isn't building. This isn't working towards the future. Nope. It's now. I get it. I understand the frustration of the fan base. I understand where we're at. I've made the decision. He noted I've had all of the resources, you know, at my disposal, and I decided to keep Luke because of basketball reasons. And I think he is the guy to take this team back to the playoffs. And playoffs, there were two words that I should go back and listen to these two press conferences. Really, you put together all of the media availabilities and count them. But there were two words that really stood out to me because I feel like they were said a lot, particularly by Monty and Luke, but you could throw De'Aaron in there and it'll fit as well. Playoffs, 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 or postseason, you know, some semblance of those two words. And defense, defense, defense. And this, to me, like if you like Tyrese Halliburton and you like the draft pick and you can applaud what the Kings did with the so-called bargain buys at the trade deadline, those were two Monty McNair moves. And it's cool that says Monty McNair, I haven't earned your trust. Like, don't trust me yet. Like, that's fine. And that's cool. But there are people who are like, hey, I like what Monty did here. This is cool. Like, this is good. Mm-hmm. Maybe he didn't move around as much in free agency last year, but you know, his feet were barely in the shallow end of the pool at that point. If you like all of those decisions and you trust all of those decisions, for me, you have to trust this decision to keep Luke Walton. Right. I didn't like it. I didn't agree with it, but he made the decision.
Right.
So it's like, okay, I'm not going to spend the next several months mad. I'm not going to spend the next several months criticizing Monty McNair for this decision because I applauded him for his other decisions, right?
You got to trust that he's,
At no point did I say, go get Terrence Davis. Go get Mo Harkless. At no point did I say, you know who would be really good for the Kings? Delon Wright. He'll really surprise people. You did. That's absolutely accurate, actually. Jill said that. I didn't. So for that, I have to give him the opportunity to be wrong about the coach. I can't sit here and be like angry about it. Would I have loved to have talked to Sam Cassell or David Vanderpool or Becky Hammond or anybody else? Absolutely. Monty decided that wasn't the route we're going to go. It's going to be Luke Walton. Just as I trusted those other decisions, I'm going to trust this one until it's failed. And hopefully the point of failure doesn't come because I'm tired of seeing that.
Right. And those two worked together last year to bring in, you know, what we considered two upgraded assistant coaches, right? And I will say, reading back over Luke's Laker, you know, history there. The biggest criticism from there was they felt like he didn't have enough X's and O's guys on the bench. And that's Gentry and that's Rex. Now, the key here is, well, an off-season practice, you know, it's another year in this same system, will that trigger a change where you brought in a new offense and a new defense this year? It didn't click. Now, will year two, will it click? I will say, because this is the second time Luke has had the worst defense in the league, right? Now, the Lakers in 16-17, it was his first year with those young guys. They were last in the league. And then the next season they went to 13, right? So he didn't get fired. You saw another year in the system and it moved, right? Last year with previous coaching, we were at 111, 14. We were 20, I think it was like 23 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And this year we went to 116 and 30. So I mean, you can't keep changing schemes every year, right? Like, you got to see if either these players can figure it out in here, or mm-hmm. you're going to have to bring in new players that can play in this system if this is who you're sticking with. It's, or you have the coaching mold to the players you have, which, as Adelman said earlier, you have to be able to adapt as a coach, right, to what works to your personnel. Maybe it's a learning curve for both coaching and these players that we have to adapt to what we have. Because I will say, I love the Rex hire, and Rex has been on good teams and has killed it with good teams, right? Like, mm-hmm. but it helps when you have talent. Like, you still have to have the roster to get there. It's, you only have so many really good development coaches in the league, right? And that's why they're known as the development coaches. So if you're not going to go hire one of those, to me, again, it goes back to, you have to fix the talent problem here in order to, if you're going to stick with these coaches. Otherwise, they're going to have to work together to adjust their styles. But I love our coaching staff, our assistants, our development staff. To me, this is the best coaching staff we've had in a while, of like legit names that are respected, right, around the league. So I hope for the best every year except the worst. Like, that's
Mentioned the roster, and I know you know this. We talked to Rick Adelman today on D'Lo and KC on ESPN 1320. And one thing that he said was, you know, we talked about, I asked him, you know, what quantifies a good coach? What quantifies a great coach? And he was, you know, he gave a very eloquent answer and talked about a number of different things, including coaches adjusting to rosters, and rather than having a coaching style, making your coaching style fit what type of players that you have. And it was so fascinating because, again, he laid it all out, and it was beautifully, beautifully laid out. But the very first thing he said was, you've got to have the roster. You've got to have the talent. And then you go and you mold your coaching style to fit these players. He talked about the differences between Portland and Sacramento. He talked about the huge differences between Sacramento and Houston, and he adjusted his coaching style to the roster. But you've got to have a good roster. There are two times in his career where he didn't particularly have a good roster. That brief stint in Golden State.
Right. And he said he didn't last for it.
Right. And in Minnesota. Yeah. So it's tough. Like, you know, it's like a house divided when you look at the roster and you go, I know some people think the roster is trash. Some people look at the roster and go, it's not that bad.
But you want to know what's interesting is, for as many people that said the roster last year, right, was better than this year, prior to the bubble, that team played 72 games. This season, how many games did they play? 72. Mm-hmm. What was their identical records through 72 games?
31-41.
So you can say, if this was a less talented roster and he still got them to 31-41, mm-hmm. is that improvement? I mean, well, I don't know what, you know, Monty's standards are when he's looking, you know, at this stuff, but I mean, I thought, what are the odds that right through 72 games, each year that's what we're getting to, and that's without practicing, mm-hmm. without an off season, with no training camp, like that's.
And really, what are we
new
talking
coaching
about?
Staff? Right?
Are we talking about Bogey? Like, what are we talking about? Like, how different was the roster last year? Like, I know Bogey was there, but was it drastically different?
People didn't agree with the backup centers, the Whiteside.
Okay.
But to me, Phil Halliburton in for Bogey, and it's, well, you know, yeah. And I don't know.
I love the, I don't like, I like the Whiteside signing when it happened, especially for what it cost. Like it was not
at a minimum.
Yeah. Like I'm still confused as to why it went so poorly. Other than he lived on the health and safety protocols list, there were plenty of occasions where it was like, yeah, DNP, he probably could have, I don't know that Hassan Whiteside is the difference between winning and losing. You really want him out there for like 12 minutes. You probably don't want him out there for too much more. But it was confusing to me as if he was just completely out of the rotation.
And the two players that I heard, it was Giles and Lynn. Giles was healthy and then hurt on Portland. But for Lynn, you know, he said that he signed with the Raptors because he wanted to make the playoffs for the first time. I don't know if Monty contacted him or not. I have no idea. I'm just going based on what he said when he signed with the Raptors was, I chose them because I wanted to make the playoffs for the first time. He was waived. He went on to sign, you know, the Wizards picked him up and he helped them go on this
one more time.
But as soon as Gafford came in, Gafford trumped him. And it was Robin Lopez and Gafford for a lot of the time. And people were getting mad at Brooks that he had the three centers and wasn't choosing between them all. But again, it's not like these guys were out there dominating somewhere else to where it was, why didn't we resign Bazemore? You know, I've heard Bazemore, he went and signed with the Warriors, even if the Kings contacted him, which people had said that they felt that was going to happen. He chose the Warriors. If the Warriors are contacting me over the Kings, who's going to choose the Kings over the Warriors? I'm sorry. Like that's, we got to be realistic here. And at the end of the day, those guys are, we need more. We need more than that. Right. In my opinion,
I agree.
We're really going to make a step, like we can't be, you know, hung up on those kinds of roster.
We need Chris Webber. We need Vlade, you know, tying the Rick Adaman thing back in and tying the, you know, the Hall of Fame guys. Rick Adaman got here and he talked about, you know, the specialness of that team and being able to sign Vlade, being able to acquire Chris Webber. Those are the types of players that you need. You need a Chris Webber type. Exactly. The guys on your shirt right now. Those are the types of guys that you need. And that's where Monty's got to go to work. Like Monty's first decision to really put his stamp on this team, this is Monty McNair's team, was deciding that Luke Walton was going to be the head coach moving forward. Great. Let's get behind him. Okay. But you've got real work to do. Because you're 100% right. The Kent Bazemore additions, the Alex Lynn additions, the Trevor Ariza's, these different like mismatch pieces to kind of fill in roster spots isn't good enough.
Right. And I love those guys and what they brought because those were the dogs for us, right? And but again, you can't keep bringing them in for a year and not have one of your three guys that are making $20 million not be the dog for you. Like that's not going to work.
Who was I reading about? I can't remember who I was reading about today, but it was talking about like a form of leader. Oh, it was Jason Tatum. Jason Tatum obviously had the, you know, the 50-point game against the Wizards in the play-in game, and it was, you know, he has a certain style of leadership, and reading about it, it was like, this feels like De'Aaron. You know, De'Aaron once said in a post-game press conference, I think it was a post-game press conference, where he's not, I'm not a fiery guy. I'm not a rah-rah. I might not do it in the way that you want. And it kind of felt like that's what Jason Tatum is, which on Boston is fine because you've got Marcus Smart. You got Marcus Smart. And when you have, and Marcus Smart, unlike, with all due respect to Kent Bazemore and all due respect to, you know, Mo Harkless and Terrence Davis and guys like that, Marcus Smart is pivotal to the Boston Celtics' success. Like, he is a pillar of what they do. I'm not going to stretch it and call it a big three, but it's Marcus, Jalen, and Jason Tatum.
Right, and in all the rumors of, and I think it was Amick that even said it, that when the Kings talked to Boston, it was, okay, give us Smart. Like, that's who we, if we're taking someone, that's who we want. Like, that's the kind of guy we need. We know that's not going to happen because of, you know, how pivotal that guy is there.
I don't know, but I'm not going to question Sam's reporting. Boston was not trying to acquire Harrison Barnes. I don't know where that came from. I don't know if it came from Sam. I don't know if someone was in a conversation. Boston did not try to acquire Harrison Barnes.
It was every reporter that was trying to link Boston to anybody.
I think it was Bill Simmons, and it rolled downhill from there.
And Scalabrine was there.
Scalabrine, that's right.
It was on one of the post game or something.
You're 100% right. Scalabrine said,
where it started.
Anything you hear, it's all smoke screens. It's all smoke screens. All they want is Harrison Barnes. I have it on good authority.
Right.
That is not true.
There you go, everybody. And I've been getting chilled because I've been saying online that I wasn't questioning anything. It was just, to me,
it didn't make sense
for what those teams ended up paying for guys. None of it made sense that they would have gotten offered this treasure trove, mm-hmm. you know, when. And then the reporting that came out is they didn't even offer that for Aaron Gordon, who's younger and less, you know, has even less money attached to it. Like that there was, it just, yeah, it didn't make sense. So good to know that I'm not crazy.
No, you're not crazy. It was, when we would talk about it on the radio, before I got the heads up on this, which was well after the trade deadline, was, where do you play him, like in the fourth quarter? Like, what do you do with Harrison here? And I can't envision the Celtics contemplating giving up Marcus Smart unless it's like a whoa type deal, unless it's a big, big move that gets them, like we're talking about them potentially winning the Eastern Conference next year. And I think with the team made as it is, I certainly thought they were going to be top four this year. If nothing else, in a really, really competitive top five. But I think that's the only type of deal that moves Marcus Smart is obviously this isn't happening, but I'm talking like, cause it was a rumor, like an Anthony Davis type trade, like something like that, where you're like, Devonta Sabonis. Whoa. They're competing with Brooklyn and Philly now.
Yeah.
So,
Monty's got his work cut out for him. I mean,
he does,
you know,
I mean, he's saying all the right things. I feel like Luke said all of the right things. Luke actually made me laugh, in the press conference when he said, he was asked about, you know, when did he know he was going to stay? Was he worried about it? And he hit him with I'm under contract. I wasn't thinking about it. Like, it wasn't a big deal. Like, I'm under contract. I was planning on being here. I didn't think twice about it. I love that answer because it's such an F off answer. It's such a screw you answer that I don't want to say Luke won me over.
I was getting paid regardless.
I wasn't going to say Luke won me over with that because that's a stretch. But I remember thinking, that's a damn good answer right there. That is a damn good answer right there.
Yeah. And for people that tuned in that just, you know, wanted us to go on a trash spree, I'm at the point mentally that it's like, okay, I didn't agree with it, but I'm never going to root against this team to not figure it out. So you know what? I'm going to dig in and
it's fine. Like
we can improve and figure out, like it's the move's made. There's nothing we can do to change it. It's, you know,
if you didn't like Monty before, you can be upset now. If you're like, Tyrese wasn't the right guy, I hated the trade deadline. I had
plenty of those messages. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you're out there, I think you have every right. Like, if you want to be upset about this, like you could be upset. And no matter like how, you're allowed to be upset. It's just, I'm not going to go trash this move that Monty McNair made when I've praised everything else that he's done. It's not like all of a sudden I'm smarter than he is. And it's like, nope, you should have talked to Sam. You should have talked to David. You should have talked to Becky. You should have talked to somebody else other than Luke Walton. It's like, well, Tyrese worked beyond my wildest imagination. I had no idea that DeLon Wright was going to be such a pivotal part of what we were doing, and Terrence Davis and all of that. Okay. Don't like the decision, but I'm going to ride it with you. And I'm going to root for Monty's success. I'm going to root for Luke Walton's success. Because the fact is, if Luke fails, this is a huge mark on Monty McNair. Like, I know some people saying, well, if the season starts bad, you could always move on from him. There aren't a lot of situations like Nate McMillan. Like those, and I love Alvin Gentry. I love Rex Kalamian. But what we saw in Atlanta, that's not entirely normal. So to just think that you can fire Luke Walton and move into Alvin Gentry, that's tough.
And you had the difference in these players are saying that they're listening to them. We're not seeing it on the court, but in Atlanta, it was, oh no, we tuned him out. Like it was not even, right. And they brought in Nate knowing that that was already happening.
He's going to command
respect. That's not the case here. And Nate is Nate, right? Like that's.
Yes. He's an established coach.
Right. And I think Atlanta has more talent on that roster. They still have two of their guys that were playing at the beginning of the year. Their youngest guys that are not in. That's going to make that team even better. To me, to even compare those rosters is.
Yeah.
You're looking at a team with more talent. And they play defense. Like they are a good defensive team. They have their young guys. That's what they were known for.
I didn't buy their offseason moves and kind of smirked at their early season failures. When Nate McMillan took over, I thought,
it looked like a completely different team.
I thought, I said on the radio that I was like, this is going to be a different team. But I'm not confident what that's going to look like. I'm not going to backtrack about what I said about Atlanta, but I feel like this is going to be a completely different team. And then, you know, lo and behold, they were very much a different team. I had to eat all of those. Yeah, I had to eat all of those words I said about Atlanta. So we'll spend time over the course of the next few weeks. Obviously, Luke Walton back as the Kings coach. That's what we wanted to focus on today. But we've got an entire offseason to focus on Marvin Bagley, to focus on Buddy Hield. We have an entire offseason to talk about roster difficulties. We're going to have a summer league to cover as announced today. That's going to be back in Las Vegas August 8th. And I think that was the first place I actually met Jill in person. At a summer league in Las Vegas. So we'll have the opportunity and time to break all of that stuff down, which we absolutely will on the Sacramento Kings podcast. If you don't subscribe to the D'Lo and KC podcast, you can go check that out. It's available on Apple or wherever you get your podcast from. And you can hear our conversation with Rick Adaman. It was I don't want to say I was proud of it because I don't feel like I did anything. But Rick was really, really good. He was really great to listen to.
You know, and if you respect what that guy says, he said that, you know, far too often this organization moves on too quickly from players and coaches. And at some point you have to let those guys stay together. And what did you say? Figure out their styles together. So we're year three now. You know each other's styles. Figure it out.
Yeah. And I know you're getting ready to go do Locked On Kings.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, there's a round table.
You
and we'll be talking pros and cons of Walton there, so you'll hear a little bit more of that. But you know how this place is we like the research, and then I give what I find, and then you all take your opinions from, you know, what you will.
Indeed. Absolutely. So make sure you go support our man, Matt George, and check out the Locked On Kings podcast, their roundtable that they got going on there. Make sure that you subscribe, rate, and review this show here, and know that Jill and myself, I promise you, we will be back next week here on the Sacramento Kings podcast, here on the Hoopball Podcast Network.